Hello and welcome everyone to Commerce Experience. I'm your host, Brian Walker, Chief Strategy Officer at Bloomreach. Today I'm joined by Tim Lowe, CEO and President of Lowe's Foods, a leading regional grocery store chain known for its commitment to creating a fun and engaging shopping experience for customers in store and online. I asked him to be on the show after introducing him and hearing him speak at Grocery Week late last year in Orlando, Florida. I love Tim's approach to customer experience as he shared some of the unique ways Lowe's Foods has taken routine elements of the grocery experience and turned them on their head, delighting customers along the way. Frankly, I think we can all learn something from Tim's way of thinking and his team's approach. Under his leadership, Lowe's Foods has consistently ranked as a top workplace and innovator in the industry and grew share during the pandemic. In this episode, we'll discuss creating synergy between an online and in-store experience, fostering strong customer engagement, and Tim's thoughts on how to be a disruptor in any industry. Enjoy the show. Tim, thank you so much for carving out some time to be with us here today on the show. I'm excited to talk with you today.
Yeah, same here, Brian. Thanks a lot for having me.
Tim, we always lead off an interview on the podcast with the same question. What was your first role or job that dealt with digital or e-commerce?
You know, that's a great question. I've got to go back a little bit on that one. When I really kind of think about, digital in general, I started my career at Walmart back in the day. And that was back when we had the old, the old paper P&Ls and that kind of stuff. We'd walk the old red book on the floor. So, it was back in the good old days. But, if I think about when I got introduced probably to digital, the most heavily experienced is my time at Best Buy. So it was late, 1900s, early, 2000s. We were out there spending a little bit of time with those guys. And I tell you, it was one of those things that was really kind of in the background, didn't really pay much attention to it to begin with. It was actually more of a nuisance, really. It was one of those things that whenever you'd have an order come through, a pager would go off on somebody and somebody would run out to the store, grab the product, run it up to the staging area, and then the guest would come by at some point in time, and pick it up. And it was probably the first most rudimentary, of the BOPUS, the buy online, pick up in store methodology back in the early 2000s. But being in a technology based company, and then we went further into the technology kind of boom started happening shortly thereafter. And it was kind of fun to watch it too, because being the electronics side of the business at that time, getting to electronic services, the different things, the digital uploads, there was a whole series of things that was out there that you saw kind of revolutionizing things. But then you also saw things like whether it was Webvan, those kind of stuff that kind of came and went, and these guys that were well-funded, $100 million of funding, out of business in 9 months. So it was an interesting time back then, for sure.
It was a crazy time.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the Wild West. It was a crazy time.
Yeah.
And obviously, Best Buy went on kind of a roller coaster itself as a business. And we had John Thompson on an earlier episode and kind of went through that whole sort of ride that Best Buy went on, obviously disrupted to some degree, clearly by Amazon, but then now making a strong recovery, just like a lot of brick and mortar retail has made a bit of a strong recovery by getting back to basics, getting back to roots, and also focusing clearly on omnichannel. So anyway, great context for the episode.
Yeah.
Tim, I guess my first kind of meaty question, many people view grocery industry as a bit commoditized, but at Lowe's Foods, you've really successfully fostered a sense of fun and tremendous customer engagement, really focusing on differentiating the experience, that the consumer has with Lowe's. I'd love to have you give our listeners a glimpse of what that looks like, what that feels like, how you go about focusing on that within your organization and within your stores and within your online experience.
Yeah. Brian, it's one of those things we woke up, a few years ago and kind of looked around and we saw, competition coming from the north, competition coming from the south, competition coming from Europe, coming from all angles, and we had this big flux of, folks coming in, and we said, we got to do something different here. So we did what we call, ethnographies, which again, a lot of people are probably familiar with, but we didn't go in as Lowe's Foods. We actually went in as more of a third party, unknown company, and just started talking to people and just saying, hey, tell me about. And the funny thing is that, people, not on purpose, but, you know, they would lie to you. You know, you'd walk in their place and you'd talk to them and say, so tell me about, you know, what do you buy? You know, why do you buy? Where do you go? And people are like, oh man, I eat organic, healthy, you know, drink lots of water. And then we'd say, hey, can we look in your cabinets? And you'd be surprised. You know, so for a $25 gift card, you'd be surprised what people let you, you know, do. So we went and rummaged through their cabinets and their refrigerators. And here's, you know, the sugary sodas and the chips.
Yeah.
And, you know, they always had the excuse, right? It was always like, oh yeah, but that's not, you know, that's not really how I do it.
It's not how I want to eat is really what they meant to say.
So to your point right there, Brian, that's exactly right. So what they did is what we found is that people would talk very aspirationally. They would talk about what they wanted to be. And it wasn't necessarily always what they did. You know, so for us, what we had to do is we had to look for the questions behind the question. We had to really kind of dig in and say, what is the consumer psyche really about? What do they really want? And so, you know, what we kind of peeled the onion back and the small data, if you will, because again, people get kind of really kind of bogged down in the big data, which is very important. You got to have big data. Big data is so important. But we also got to look in the small data and says, what does the small data tell you? And what the small data was telling us is that people were looking for experiences. They were looking for a connection. They were looking for aspirational living. They were looking for motivation. They were looking for things that were kind of above and beyond. And so that kind of was a catapult for us that started us on a journey of discovery around this whole idea of how can entertainment meet food? And so that kicked off our journey.
That's great. I guess a follow-up question. I'd love to have you share a little bit, you know, chicken. I've heard you talk about this before when we met, the fried chicken in a store. I don't want to steal your thunder, but if you could kind of talk about that example, right, of how you took something that is in almost every grocery store deli and turned it into kind of a differentiator.
Yeah. You know, for us, if you think about grocery stores to that end, Brian, any grocery store USA you walk into, everybody claims has the best fried chicken, right? Everybody. So it's pretty much a commodity item when you think about, you know, the grocery industry. And so, but one of the things we did in our ethnographies that came out, the one thing that people did tell us is that you have good fried chicken. Now, we could have chalked that up and said, you know what? Everybody has fried chicken. You know, how do you differentiate with fried chicken? You know, what is that going to look like? You know, or we listen to our consumer says, I don't have anything else to really kind of work with here. So let me start with chicken because we actually do it pretty good. And so what we said was, let's start there. And so what we did is we went to our first store in Clemens, North Carolina. I remember it was back in 2013. And so we went through and we started a remodel in this store. And what we did is listening to the consumer, we kept hearing them talk about the nostalgia of things. They always talked about, you know, when the family gathered around the table or when there was a special event, whether it was a wedding or whether it was a life change event, you know, passing of a loved one, you know, whatever it may be. But there was all this nostalgia that was tied in with gathering a community back to the table. And we said, what if we could kind of go through and create that type of environment in our store? And then what would it take to be able to do things, you know, that basically would be attention getters that would be different? And so what we said is that we can, if you're going to go into chicken, you can't be typical, right? So one of the things we did do is we went through and said, okay, we're going to have the best, you know, locally raised and harvested chicken. We're going to use local breading. We're going to use bigger than other, you know, competitors' birds. We're going to do packaging. So we did all that. And what we did is we took it and we implemented it and put it in our stores. And so what we found is when we put that in there is we actually saw a pretty decent lift. I mean, so we saw, you know, a mid-teens lift in a category that's very mature. And anybody in a mature category would be pretty pleased with that. But what we said is, well, what if we do something a little bit different? What if we go to places that maybe other people won't go? What if we went to places where others were maybe afraid to go to? And what would be something that if we were to go through and do with chicken that nobody else would probably do it, even if they knew how? And so we literally had, Brian, and this is no lie, we had a 24-hour workshop. We brought in a bunch of our store teams together and everything. That's probably about 100 of us. We broke out. And about 3 o'clock in the morning, whenever you really haven't had sleep, you know, and at this point, it's like anything sounds good, right? And so a team came back and said, well, what if we actually created a chicken chandelier and we hung it above this area? What if we called it the chicken kitchen? And then what if we did a chicken dance out there on the floor? I was like, man, that's a horrible idea, but it's 3 o'clock in the morning. So it sounds good for right now. So let's talk a little bit more about that. So we went and started doing some investigating. And so we went into our store in Clemens. That was in May. So we went into our store in Clemens later that year. And we started working with former Disney trainers to be able to come in and say, help us think, you know, help us imagine. Imagine a different world. Imagine, you know, a world of possibilities. And they started talking to us, and we started, you know, kind of fooling around a little bit. We said, you know, we have this idea of this chicken chandelier. So they got us with some folks that actually did some of the animatronics and stuff down there for Disney. And we went through and we engineered our own chicken chandelier, and we took it out there, and then we hung it up above the chicken area. And then we said, okay, well, what if, you know, we started doing, you know, a chicken dance, but not just to do a chicken dance just because, but we want to celebrate the best chicken, you know, around, locally raised, harvested, all those things, good key attributes about our chicken. What if we did a chicken dance out there? And so I remember we go through, we put together all the rituals, and I remember the week we grand opened the store. It was cold. It was January. At this point, it's 2014. It was January the 7th, if I remember right. And I remember January the 7th because it was almost like 7 degrees outside, which is pretty atypical for us up here. Uh-huh. And so we go through, we open the store up. And, you know, again, the other stores, like I said, we saw about a mid-teens lift when we did change the product, change the packaging. But when we added the chicken chandelier, we changed the uniform. We actually started doing the chicken dance. We'd ring a bell and do the chicken dance underneath there in celebration of the best chicken in town. We didn't see a mid-teens lift, you know, Brian. We saw about 120% lift in our business.
Wow. Yeah.
And for a mature category to double it, you know, we said, you know, that's kind of crazy. And I remember, you know, thinking, yeah, it's absolutely crazy, right? In fact, it was so crazy. I had a gentleman walk up to me that week during the grand opening week. And he says, are you Tim Lowe? I said, yes, sir, I am. He goes, understand you're the president of the company. I said, yes, sir. He said, I just want to tell you how embarrassed I am for you. And I said, okay, well, tell me more. he said, I'm just so embarrassed that you have, you know, went through and you kind of put your team in this, you know, this uniforms, you make them get on the floor and do chicken dance. So I'm embarrassed for you. And I said, sir, I said, I understand. I said, let me ask you a question. I said, have you ever been to Disneyland or Disney World? He goes, yeah, I was, you know, took the kids down to Florida, a couple of years ago. And he was a middle-aged younger guy. And I said, sir, so let me ask you, when you were at, you know, Disneyland or Disney World, did you go through and did you see Mickey Mouse? And did you say, I am so sorry that Walt Disney asked you to dress up like Mickey Mouse? And did you walk up to Cinderella and did you say to Cinderella, you're not really a fairy princess, and I'm so sorry, you know, that they made you dress up like a fairy princess? Yeah. And he looked at me kind of puzzled. And I said, well, of course you didn't, right? I said, because you were there for entertainment. And I explained to the gentleman, I said, we're on a journey. We're kicking off a journey right now. That yes, we sell food, but what we really want to be is we're going to be an entertainment company, and we're going to intersect back with our community around entertainment. So this is where food meets entertainment. So needless to say, you know, the gentleman actually became one of our biggest Raven fans, actually, coming out of that situation. But for us, it was a learning, and it was actually a manifestation. And one of the things we saw, Brian, too, is that when we did this crazy thing called the chicken dance, the number one thing that would happen every time we would ring the bell and we would do the chicken dance, we would invite the small kids to come join us, and the kids at heart, right? So yeah. We invite everybody to come in and join us. Now, not everybody would, a few would, but the ones who did not, do you know what they did? They would reach in their back pocket. That's
Took
right.
Out their
they
phone.
Did this right yeah. here. And they videotaped this, right? And then they videotaped this, and then they would post it on social media and say, look what these crazy people are doing down at Lowe's Foods. And we would say, thank you very much. You know, that's perfect. That's exactly you know, what we want. And again, that really was the start and the evolution of something for us that says we have to break the frame. We're not comfortable living within the confines and the boxes that we've built for business over time. We've got to do something different.
Yeah. And you've extended that same kind of thinking to lots of different parts of the grocery experience. And we'll get into probably some of those examples later. But I guess my next question, of course, relates to, you know, what happened when the pandemic had such a dramatic impact with COVID and the forced movement of consumers to shop online for groceries, implementing things like curbside or delivery and so forth. What are the challenges and opportunities that presented for Lowe's Foods, and how did you respond to that? And how does that then kind of persist past, hopefully, we're well past now the pandemic's key inflection point, anyway, right?
Yeah, we'll knock on wood as we say that.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so when we look at the pandemic, I always equate it to, I was talking to a, you know, somebody recently, and I said, we had to do in 6 weeks what we had planned to do in 6 years. And so It was literally an evolution. And one of the things that that when you think about what happened is, and we see this a lot out there in industry, we see companies that try to run ahead of the consumer. And what we see is that they'll try to make changes and force changes on a consumer versus really stepping back and says, what does the consumer want or need from me? And so when the pandemic occurred, the consumer's behavior, as we well know, changed dramatically. People were cocooning, they were, social distancing, they were scared, they were, unsure, they didn't know. And at the same token, we within the grocery industry as a whole, and to all of our partners out there who service, food out to our communities, behind, again, our first line responders and, our medical, personnel. I mean, food is pretty important. If you want to see a community panic, you'll cut off their food supply. So again, first of all, kudos to the industry or restaurants and everybody who tried to, different innovative things. But one of the things that was for us that we were well positioned for is that we had actually been in the digital world and the e-commerce business here at Lowe's Foods, since 1997. And so we had gone through and we had a pretty mature, kind of basic following, that we were, our infrastructure was pretty solid. In fact, when we first started into the click and collect portion of it, it was actually dial and collect. I actually still have the original sign from when we first went into it. It's a rotary phone where literally they would call, and place their order into our help desk. I think we still have a few people actually doing that, but but we'd actually place the order for them in the whole nine yards. But anyway, so we had these plans, right? And everybody had seen these plans of what the grocery penetration was going to be over time and how it was going to escalate and all. It was going to take this number of years. Well, again, this 6 to 8 year trajectory, all of a sudden in 6 weeks, you're there. As much as you possibly can do, you had to be prepared for. I will tell you that our teams across the board, worked Herculean efforts to be able to go through and to be able to service, our communities. It took everything from the standpoint of, for us, we were focused on how are we protecting first and foremost our hosts to keep them safe and keep them well so we can continue to serve our communities. Secondly, how are we keeping our community safe? And then thirdly, how are we keeping them fed? And so whenever we started migrating into this, the consumer behavior again, shifted. And we saw that shift in consumer behavior from going in store to going online. And it continued even to this day, right? So we saw that evolution and that continuation, kind of persist. And you look at, has there been some normalization? Sure. And again, we're an entertainment company, like I mentioned before. And so for us, we had built our brand experience around entertainment, but we've also worked very diligently and very hard to say, how do we bring that to life digitally? And when you think about kind of unified commerce, omni-channel, those kind of terms these days, for us, we want to say however the consumer wants to interact with us, we want them to have that great feeling and appreciation and the halo effect, if you will, that even if I'm not at Disneyland or Disney World, whenever I interact with their products, I still get that experience. I feel that emotion. And that's what we set out to do. One of the things we saw is that we accelerated quite dramatically as everybody did with sales, but we also picked up quite a bit of share during that time frame. And really the share gain for us was because of one particular thing. And we know this because Dunnhumby actually did a report and published it of some of the top movers out there in the industry. During the time of COVID, we were actually ranked 6th in the nation as far as the e-commerce digital experience. And so
that's fantastic.
And you think about the top five as primarily, Walmart, Amazon, Target, Sam's Club, those kind of things. So we were the top kind of independent grocer, in the nation during that time frame. It was one of their fastest move forwards that they had seen. And one of the reasons they talked about as to why, when they did their research behind it, the number one things consumers said is that they trusted us and they felt safe. And so when you really think about, digital, people always think about technology first when it comes to digital. And technology is so important. Removing friction from the experience, absolutely key. Being able to go through and create an environment where people can go through and seamlessly kind of migrate through the transition points to be able to go through from decision-making to checkout, you want to be able to do that. But even more important than the actual experience, because a lot of people can knock that off, if you can go through and create a brand and you can create a connection back to the consumer where they trust you, number one, then that's what's going to make the technology work for you ultimately.
Yeah, that's tremendous. We've seen in our Commerce Pulse data where we report on different segments. Obviously, the grocery segment, saw tremendous growth, especially in North America, where digital adoption, e-commerce in that segment was pretty low, right? Pre-pandemic. And of course we saw growth rates in the 160, 170, 190% rate. And of course that started to moderate, but was still exceptionally strong, you know, month over month, year over year growth throughout the pandemic. And then post-pandemic, really starting earlier in 2022, that started to plateau. But for the year, it didn't go back. It actually grew modestly, right? Still in 2022, I think up close to 2% in terms of sales year over year, but traffic even a little higher than that. So what I would say is that it kind of reached a plateau, kind of a new normal, but it hasn't really regressed. You know, a lot of people forecasted that consumers are going to go back to pre-pandemic levels. You know, my thesis is a lot of consumers now recognize just the convenience that they can realize, whether it's because they don't have the ability to easily get into a store, or they're just very busy people with families, kids, jobs, all these things pressing on their time. And while they may enjoy the opportunity to get into the store to shop for a special occasion on a routine basis, right, online, whether it's delivery or pickup, is just a convenience factor. But I guess I'm interested how you see digital and in-store experiences now moving forward, right? Now, what do you see, you know, in the near term and longer term horizon as you leverage the digital channels, not just for ordering, but for engagement, and how you see those things intersecting moving forward?
Yeah, you know, it's a great narrative, great setup. I mean, when you think about for the way I view it, when I think about digital, the consumer is not leaving e-commerce. You know, they're not leaving the digital space. You know, it's convenient. It's a sure thing. It's something that I have, you know, the ability to be able to go through it. And one of the things that we've always kind of built our company on was for our consumer is looking at our guests and saying, we want to make sure that we provide time for what matters. And the e-commerce experience actually allows them to have time for what matters. So rather than them having to go through and be able to go and do grocery shopping or those kind of things whenever they don't have the time to do it, they're a busy mom, like you said, or perhaps they have parents they're caring for, or whatever it may be, whatever the situation may be, or just the convenience of it, they're able to kind of go through and to be able to do that. The thing I think that continues that as we watch in the industry is some interesting things, especially in the grocery space, is there's this integration, though, that we've seen it. We've seen it in the numbers, we've seen the analytics, and we've seen it through the research that tells us, though, that people are still highly interested in the overall experience elements that are coming with it. So I think that if companies and folks and individuals and leaders think that all they have to do is have the technology alone, you know, for the future, that's where, again, I think that's where they kind of come off track a little bit. I think the ability to be able to have the right technology with the right technology partner, along with the right brand of how you're taking your brand to market is what's key. For us, what we've seen is, yes, we've seen the e-commerce business continue, but what we talk about are omni-channel guests. So rather than just measuring just the e-commerce, you know, section only, what we look is what happens to the total basket of the consumer who shops with us in an e-commerce environment, whether exclusively or as a part of the broader experience. And what we find is if they interact with us with e-commerce as part of the broader experience, those consumers are more loyal, they're more faithful, they will actually spend more money actually in store, because not because they're necessarily spending more money overall. What they're doing is you're gaining share of wallet, because, you know, they're going through and saying, your brand, you know, I can interact with, and I have confidence digitally, I have confidence in store, I have confidence at curbside, I have confidence at delivery, I have confidence where I call your call center, I have confidence when I interact with your digital coupons, where I'm looking at your digital ad. And so when you start really kind of peeling it back, it's not just one of those things, it's all of those things. And it is the shadow of all that really kind of takes and represents the ability for the company to be able to go out and stand out in the future. And I can't echo enough, you know, how important it is having the right, you know, technology partners, you know, kind of come along with you as you kind of take that journey, because it is a hand in glove experience. It's not an either or.
Terrific. Thank you so much for that. And one kind of follow on question, as someone who's so focused on the overall experience and the connection that you have with your customers, how do you see the role of third party kind of, you know, a delivery and, you know, picking services like an Instacart, for example, and of course there's a number of others out there. How do you see that you know, really evolving? What role do you see that really playing? And how do you look at services like that as a component of your customer experience?
Yeah, you know, it's one for us, Brian, that as we look at it, again, I go back to what does the consumer want? It's right. And so often, again, people want to say, well, what do I want for the consumer versus what does the consumer want?
Right.
There's a certain sector of consumer, they want that interaction, whether it's an Instacart, DoorDash, you know, Uber Eats, whatever it may be, right? So they're interested in that venue. And so the way we view it is that we need to be available for those consumers if they choose.
Every channel.
That's right.
Yeah.
If they choose, right? Because it's not up to me to choose. It's not my choice for the consumer. And again, this is one where so often we've seen brands that they abandon the core of their base and they move towards something that they want the base to believe in, but the base isn't ready to go there yet. And so we've all seen the industry information, the valuations of what's happened, with Instacart. We've seen, some of the pressures they're facing, the pressures that's being put on, DoorDash and those kind of things. The reality is that it's going to continue, Boxed, et cetera. So on. All those spaces are going to continue to be pressured, in my opinion, but there will be winners within that space. There will be people that's going to be out there that's going to make that successful. It's not going away. And it is one that I think, though, that, again, when I go back to our viewpoint on it, is that our primary focus is our internal, our Lowe's Food to Go experience, our internal, experience back to the consumer. Because if they experience that to the highest degree, even when they use the Instacarts, even when they use the DoorDashes, the halo of our brand is still the predominant mindset in their mind when they're placing that order, not Instacart, not DoorDash. And so, and we know that to be true. And that's why it's so important for us to give great quality. And by the way, one of the things for us is that you say, well, Tim, well, how do you make your brand live in a world like Instacart or a world like DoorDash? And so we don't go spend a bunch of advertising dollars or do those kind of things. What we look is we allow, the quality of our products and the quality of our brands to really differentiate us. So for us, for instance, an inflationary environment in grocery, things like private label are very, very important. And so for us, we started this journey a few years ago, creating what we call brown bag. It's the industry doesn't have a version of clean label. So what we did is we invented our own. We call it the seven no's. And so it's basically the seven things that are not in the ingredients. And so therefore, it's our version of a clean label. And so people can actually buy with confidence. And so one of the things we've seen over time is whether we're talking coffee, pizza, ice cream, all these kind of things, we start with quality first, 200% guarantee, and again, clean label. And then we go through there and we know that we're NBE or better, national brand equivalent or better. So by offering those unique differentiated items that the rest of the industry is really not doing, holistically yet, and by us kind of carving that out, again, it gives confidence back to the consumer and to our product so that when they interact with us in other areas like DoorDash and Instacart, they making that connection, again, building that trust, going back to that trust factor we talked about before in our brands and our product that keep them coming back to us.
So just to double click on that, just to make sure, we got that, because I think, there's sort of some industry terminology there. I want to make sure that those of us who are not as close to grocery as you are, when you talk about the seven no's, you talk about the clean label, you're really talking about quality and the fact that these are, high integrity products without, additives, et cetera, that you're really focusing on delivering that through your private label program. So the customer comes to just have a tremendous amount of confidence as they try product across different categories. And hopefully you're able to then, ease some of the inflationary pressure or potentially have a better margin environment for your business as well. Did I get that right?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, when you think about the seven no's, there's things like, no artificial flavors, no high fructose corn syrups, no MSGs, et cetera, and so on. So we clean the labels up, for the consumer so they don't have to worry about it. They can have confidence in it. But we start with the quality of the product first. And if we cannot get it to clean label, it does not go into our own label.
Right. That makes a ton of sense. Very related to that in some ways.
Sure.
Just thinking back, 20, 30, 40 years, right? Which seems like a long time, but we have seen such a tremendous evolution in American dietary and culinary interests, right? And obviously this podcast is listened to by many people over in Europe. Maybe the evolution in Europe is somewhat equivalent, but I would say American tastes have moved even more markedly, right? In some cases, maybe more toward European or certainly international, you know, tastes. How do you think the pandemic impacted, you know, consumer purchasing patterns? So it's kind of back to that. But also, how do you stay on top of all these evolving trends and interests and products, right? Sriracha wasn't even a thing, you know, 10 years ago for most American consumers. What a foreign concept. And now people are using it like ketchup. You know, that's just one of many, 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 many examples. But how do you stay on top of that?
Yeah, when you speak about sriracha, you're speaking to my heart there. I know during the pandemic, there was a shortage of sriracha, and I was stockpiling. I'm just telling you, that's a staple in my household for sure. You know, it's the thing I think that a lot of the industry as a whole, and I would classify some of the food industry in relationship to restaurants, but most of the grocery industry, I think they get locked in the traditional mindset. You talk about 20, 30, 40 years ago about how we quantified, you know, different food groups. And so there was obviously the quantification of whether it was better for you or, you know, those kind of things, right? So, you know, or indulgent, et cetera, so on. But then there was a quantification of the stylistic of food, right? So am I eating, you know, Mexican, Hispanic? Am I eating Italian? You know, those kind of things. What we saw is that there was a lot of experimentation that occurred during the pandemic. Folks were at home, and what we saw is more of a fusion. And the fusion makes a ton of sense because we, you know, very foolishly try to classify people into sectors and segments. And we say, okay, well, you know, this individual, you know, they're from this particular, you know, background and demographic. So that's exactly what they eat. But what we fail to think about is, for example, you know, some folks that are good friends of mine, that she is actually a Puerto Rican and then, you know, and he is Ecuadorian. You may say, well, that's not too far apart. Actually, their eating behaviors are actually quite different. But what happened is we've seen when you pull the two together, there's a whole new environment that comes out of it.
They're living in the United States.
That's right.
You know, they're going to fuse all of that tradition, et cetera, into what they're doing as well.
That you're 100% right. I mean, so whether you grew up south, right, or you grew up north, and so you merge in those families together. If an Italian family, you know, marries into a Hispanic family, a Black family, whatever it may be, you know, there is new, you know, great heritage that comes from these cultures that have fantastic food offerings. And so people start experimenting because they start thinking, you know, that's really good, you know, but from my heritage, we have this, it's really good. What if we put those two things together? And so for us, what we try to do, we ask ourselves constantly all the time is, where is the consumer's palate, you know, wanting to go? And then how can we think differently, not in silos, but how do we think differently cross-culturally to help people explore, help them experiment, to be able to go through and think about.
And with confidence.
With confidence, right? And to think about things they haven't thought about before. And that's why, whether it's, you know, some of the recipes, we do sampling in the stores, we do lots of different things to help people along that journey to overcome being fearful, you know, of some of these things they might otherwise be a little bit afraid of, and experiment and try new things. But I think that's going to continue to move forward. I think the pandemic, again, shifted, especially our younger generation. They're very open-minded to trying new things. And I will tell you, you know, I know for my kids, you know, if they barely knew how to cook cereal, but coming out of the pandemic, they experimented a lot. And now, I mean, they're doing their full meal preps. And then they actually don't want to go out to eat as much because they have created these new, you know, great experiences kind of overall for themselves, and a great amount of discovery is happening.
Rediscovered the joy of cooking for friends and family, and also, of course, it's healthier. But then when you do go out to eat, maybe you're looking for more, even more of an experience with that, right? Versus just, you know, to fill up. And, you know, I guess kind of a follow-on question too, there's no question that social media also, in a sense, gets people kind of to think differently and maybe sometimes hard to anticipate what might pop in terms of sales. I guess I'm kind of interested. Do you see that as well happening kind of within your stores?
It was a few months ago. I'm walking through my store one day. I'm walking through, and all the grape tomatoes are gone, and then all of the and all this this particular style of mozzarella cheese is gone. And I'm thinking, is everybody all of a sudden, you know, just kind of going through and, you know, eating, you know, your grape tomatoes with mozzarella cheese? I mean, what's kind of going on here? Well, come to find out, they were two ingredients of a TikTok video that caught this craze out there, and then all of a sudden, is like all these items just gone. And in fact, more recently, just over over Thanksgiving, there was another TikTok video that came out that talked about how to make using egg noodles to be able to go through and to make this this casserole with your leftover turkeys. Well, I was walking the store. It's like, where's the egg noodles? There is no egg noodles to be had anywhere.
Yeah.
And how do you prepare for that, right? So who knows which ones of these particular things are going to like take off, and they'll be like a flash. They'll go and then they're gone. And like, okay, I'm going to order a whole bunch of egg noodles. Well, guess what? You know, now you're setting all these egg noodles because everybody's already eaten all their turkey.
Yeah.
So we're for sure seeing it out there. And it is one of those things that can be frustrating, but my goodness, is it fun? You know what? And this is what it's really all about, this whole idea of discovery out there and kind of being a part of that. It's a fun wave to ride.
Yeah. And always changing, right?
Yeah.
Always something new, right? We talked about private label earlier, so I was going to bring that up, but I think we kind of covered kind of the role and importance in your approach there. But I guess I'd like to get your take on another kind of factor that's top of mind. Obviously, there's a large M&A kind of thing looming out there. We'll see what happens. But what's the impact of consolidation on the grocery industry, on the consumer? How do you, obviously, as a leader within the industry, look at that? How do you think, you know, our listeners should think about the impact of consolidation within the industry?
You know, I'll tell you that consolidation's been a part of the industry for a while. If you really kind of go back and look at the grocery industry, I mean, you know, think about, you know, companies that were the powerhouses of yesteryear. I mean, the AMPs of the world. I mean, you know, Kmart, quite frankly, was had a very, very big strong stay into the grocery push, you know, there for a while. There's been quite a few different, you know, kind of grocery companies that were around that are now gone and, you know, no longer in existence. So there's always been a certain amount of that that's been out there. I do think, though, in the times that we live in today, with the inflationary environment that we're in, I think a lot of the success that a lot of, you know, grocers and other retailers had, you know, that had the advantage from the pandemic, those advantages are going to quickly, you know, they're quickly diminishing and going away. The consumer's becoming more and more price conscious because it matters. They still want to be taking care of themselves. They want to be healthier living, again, because they know what they just recently went through with the pandemic environment. So health is more important, but they still want that indulgence, right? So they still want that portion of it. But price, obviously, whenever you're spending more, you know, to be able to fuel, you know, your car, to be able to heat your home, to be able to pay for your medicines, and even the food escalations. We see the price that's happening, you know, across many commodities today, you know, with the avian bird flu and different things that's impacting us. What it is, that's continued to put pressures, you know, back. So there's going to continue to be consolidation within the industry, you know, overall. The thing is I think that this is where, again, I go back to the ones who will survive and the ones who will kind of make it through this evolution are the ones who kind of go back to the consumer and really ask this question, what does a consumer want? So, you know, an example I like to use, Brian, is, you know, a few years ago, whenever I was growing up, if I wanted to put something on the wall and I wanted to hang something on the wall, then I would go, you know, we'd go to the hardware store, we'd buy a drill, and we'd go back and we would drill the hole in the wall, you know, we put the screw in it, you know, and then we would hang the heavy object or whatever it may be. In today's environment, you think about the consumer of the day, they don't want to buy a drill. They don't want to drill the hole in the wall. They don't want to put the screw in it. What they want is they want the service provided for them. They want the hole to be in the wall, but they don't necessarily want to have to do it because, again, it goes back to them for the things that are most important for them, right, of where they're spending their time. And so, therefore, they have a different set of priorities. So I use that as an example just to say, the folks who are paying attention to the consumer, saying, what do you really want? You don't want to buy a drill. So if all of a sudden a lot of people want to put a lot of stuff on their walls, you're not going to necessarily sell more drills. You should be in the drill in the wall, you know, service business, right? And you go drill the holes in the wall for them. And then that's how you're going to evolve your business to be different than what it was of yesteryear. And we all know the examples. I mean, it's so hard for, you know, individuals to disrupt themselves and their industries to disrupt themselves. And, you know, we know that whether, you know, if I came to you a few years ago and said, hey, Brian, I got this fantastic deal for you, man. You know, why don't you invest this money in this business that's going to be the largest overnight stay business in the world.
Yeah,
you're
right.
Not going to own any inventory at all. So put your life savings in here. You know, and you're going to be great, right? You look at me like I'm crazy, but welcome to Vrbo, right? And so, but Vrbo was not, you know, created by Hilton or Marriott or, you know, any of those folks. These are people that were outside the industry who were thinking, you know, differently about how to kind of go through and create something new and different within that environment.
Yeah, it creates opportunities, right? Absolutely. You know, just to kind of close out and then we'll get to our last question. But, you know, I've heard when I heard you speak, you know, you talked about the choice. And this is guys, somewhat related, I guess, to the last question. But you talked about, you know, the choice between being a disruptor or being among the disrupted. Right. And, you know, I'd love for you to kind of think about share with us, I guess I should say, what it takes to be a disruptor in the grocery industry, right? What has often been seen as we sort of started the conversation as sort of a established legacy, very mature industry with kind of tried and true models that many sort of come to now expect and rely on. What does that mean when you are leading your organization and, you know, what are some of the things that you think are important to think about when you think about disruption in your industry?
Yeah, you know, within our environment, here's a question we always ask ourselves that will answer whether you're a disruptor or one being disrupted. Within your industry, whatever industry you're in, I don't care if you're a lawyer, I don't care if you're into engineering, I don't care if you sell software or if you sell, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter, whatever industry you're in, let me ask you this question. If I were to come to you and say, I need you to find a way to integrate doing the chicken dance into what you do, right? If I were to come and ask you that question, yeah. And if you sit there and say, not for me, you're being disrupted. Uh-huh. You know, and it's not about doing the chicken dance because that's not the deal. The deal is, are you willing to listen to the craziest of ideas and say, is there something there I should be listening to? Is there something there that I truly should be paying attention to? And we've all heard the quote, I believe, that from Ford whenever he was creating the automobile, and people said, hey, did you go talk to the people about what they wanted in a relationship before you developed the first automobile? He goes, no, absolutely not, because if I would have, they would have just asked for a faster horse. And so the question that I would ask, folks out there, regardless of your business is, are you building faster horses? Is that really what you're doing? Or are you creating automobiles? Are you dreaming big? And when you do dream big, are you just dreaming or are you doing? And so it's one of those things that so often, it's one of the things we talk about, Brian, is that you have to go to places where other people refuse to go. Now, let me tell you, most every competitor, in our area, for sure, they know that we do the chicken dance in our stores. They've walked in and they've seen it. They've through the outside lens, they've seen the success and everything we have. Let me ask the question, how many out there do you believe has gone through and knocked off and they're doing the chicken dance in their store? None of them, right? Because we went to a place where nobody else will go. They won't go there.
And by the way, anyone who's going into your stores realizes you've taken a similar kind of concept to whole other parts of the business, right? You've gone beyond just the focusing on the chicken.
Yep.
And so it's a game of catch up, right? As you continue to think about how to innovate within the experience, well beyond where you may have started.
Well, you're exactly right. And so for us, when we opened that first store in Clemens, North Carolina, back in January the 7th of 2024, we opened with 5 concepts. Today, we have over 20 concepts that we have to choose from when we open the store. Everything from where we smoke our own meats, in-house. We have our sit-down beer environment where, we can grab a glass of beer and walk around the store.
I'm getting hungry and thirsty hearing you talk.
There you go. We have our Southern Mill wines. You can have a glass of wine. We were doing things that are different that are out there. And in fact, we went through and we opened our own brewery. We have our own brewery down in South Carolina in one of our stores. We continue to dream, right? Every day we wake up and we're dreaming and we're saying, how can we be better? We just opened a brand new concept down on the coast, down in Wilmington. We just opened it up back in November. It's all around popcorn. It's called Poppy Go Lucky. I mean, you go in, this is a great big popcorn thing popping out of the wall. We've got a little thing on the floor. It looks like a little bubble has popcorn popping in it. I mean, it's stuff that's the smell, it's the experience. You're kind of going in and we're constantly asking ourselves is, how do we disrupt us? Because if we don't disrupt us, somebody else will. Yeah. And what we're not looking to do is be incremental. Because we have our North Star for us, and our North Star is, where does entertainment meet food?
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, we want to be known for 2 things. The first thing we want to be known for is our people. We want to be said that, hey, this is the you know, this is the best place to work and the best place to shop. The second thing we want to be known for is an entertainment company. I don't want the first thing to people to say is, hey, it's a great grocery store. What I want them eventually to say is that is a great entertainment environment. Oh, by the way, did you know they sell groceries? You know, are we perfect? Are we there yet? Absolutely not. You know, we have a long journey yet to go ahead of us, a long way. But I'll tell you, you know, each and every day we want to wake up disrupted. You're either the lion or the gazelle, right? So either way, in the morning, you better wake up running.
Yeah, I love that. And a great segue to my last question. Again, we ask every guest on the podcast the same last question, Tim. And this is kind of related to technology, but I'm looking forward to how you put that into context of the experience and what you just shared is so important. What futuristic digital commerce innovation are you most looking forward to? Or alternatively, what do you think is overhyped and, you know, we're spending way too much time thinking about and we should just stop and move on? So you can kind of go high, you can kind of go low, or if you have an answer for both, I'm happy to hear that too.
Well, I'm an optimist, so let me go the positive route. something I'll tell you that I'm geeked about because I think it plays right in the hands of what we do. I think about the metaverse. I mean, When you think about entertainment, think about the ability to be able to have a Lowe's Foods environment that you're able to virtually kind of walk into, and you can have, you know, all the experiences that we can even fathom and dream of, stuff that I can't do in real life, I can do in the virtual world, that I can bring to life for you in such a way that gives you an experience beyond your wildest dreams. And I can actually go through and I can create it and I can tailor it to you. So if you're a beer enthusiast, you know, and then I can tailor it to you. If you're a wine enthusiast, great. If you're a coffee enthusiast, fantastic. If you're a better for you living, you know, environment, you know, that's great. Whatever your passion is, I can create an experience for you. And if you want to, you know, go through with us and experience Asia through Lowe's Foods, then come with us. You know, if you want to come through and experience different, you know, fusions of food and experience, you know, those cultures and how they fuse together and how we think about it, you know, much more experientially than just trying to watch something in 2D on a television, you know, screen or a video screen. I mean, that to me excites me because it fits in the core and the cross section of our brand of who we want to be, which is an entertainment company. Now, let me tell you, the metaverse is big. It's scary. It's all this kind of stuff. But that's also why I love it, because if, you know, for us, I mean, to run to the big and the scary, you know, in the places that other people won't go is the place for us. Now, we don't always want to be, I don't have $10 billion to go spend on, you know, like Google does on creating the new metaverse. So I'll let them create it. And then what we want to do is we want to go in and enjoy it and be fast followers and create experiences for our consumers that is above and beyond anything they could ever hope, dream, or imagine.
Awesome. I love it. And, you know, right now I'm kind of thinking I want to go in and have one of those craft beers and some smoked meat, maybe some fried chicken.
There you go. We got it.
But I will be down in Charlotte soon. So I'll have to make a special effort to get into one of your stores and experiencing that.
We'll look forward to it.
Tim, thanks so much again for your time and sharing all your fantastic insights and thoughts with us here on the podcast. Really enjoyed it.
Well, Brian, thank you very much. We appreciate it. You guys have a great day, okay?
All right, wonderful. And for those of you listening, be sure to check out the show notes. You can find out information about Tim and Lowe's Foods. And obviously, we'd love to hear from you. Reach out, give us feedback, ideas you have for the show. In the meantime, be safe, be well. Here's to good business.